is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. A lot of news here, friends, but the three words I want to limit here today on the program is Russia, obstruction, impeachment. There's a whole series of words we want to limit. Where is the news cycle going these days, I think, is the bigger question. I mean, it stretches the mind, truly. I'm sure you agree with me, which reminds me to remind you how important this newscast is that we do here, because, friends, there is a lack of serious news out there, and it's hard to understand the whole scope of what's really taking place here. Well, listen, on the program today, we've got a lot to talk about. One big story, Big Pharma and your genetic coding. A very interesting story. What could possibly go wrong with this? We'll jump into some things that I think you'll find very fascinating. The brainwashing of Black America and how really the far left has overreached in the Black community. And the top stories, lots to talk about here. Let me bring on here next to Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst, a political commentator, and host here at America Out Loud. She's the author of one of her new books here, Hamas, Care, and the Muslim Brotherhood, The Plot to Destroy America. All of the books of all of our authors and both our guests and our experts are on the America Out Loud bookstore, friends. You'll find a lot there. Also joining here, Dennis Santiago. Dennis is an American strategist, a philosopher, patriot. He focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Now let's get to the top stories here on Viewpoint This Sunday. And I'd like to start with the China deal in the last couple of days here, with the president had announced that they've come to a substantial phase one trade deal, the president has said, with Xi Jinping and China. Now, this is after about an 18-month problem with the trade war that has been ongoing here between China and the United States, been a back and forth, tit for tat. And it really has become very difficult here. The deal, Ilana, that looks very interesting as far as the China purchasing more agricultural products. And one of the other interesting things I'll talk about in a moment is the currency management, intellectual property, technology transfer. But on the whole, how much faith do you have, Ilana, that this deal will see the light of day over the next few weeks? Because it still has to be signed off on, but the president feels confident, he says, that this time it will happen. Your thoughts?
Well, there's a story that is not being told, and that is a story that gives me a great deal of hope that this will go through. China is facing, and has been facing over the summer, an invasion by something called the fall army worm. And it has been working its way up from southern China and destroying their crops. Huge amount of crops, millions of acres of crops. And so China is facing a famine. The crops of the southern part of China, where these worms have been causing so much damage, is the breadbasket of China.
So, Ilana, you think this is the impetus as to why they are making the deal, because of these kinds of problems?
Look at the volume of the deal. They went from something like $18 billion worth of soy and farm products to $50 billion.
Right.
That's huge. Mm-hmm. And the president said he doesn't even know if we can actually produce all that, and that the farmers are going to have to buy more land. This is something huge, and I don't think this is something China can ignore for very long, because they're going to be in very dire straits.
Well, it's very interesting. I like what you bring up about that problem, because that kind of says, with the increase in the agricultural products, that this is a point of kind of mercy on their end, maybe, and that China is serious this time here. On the outskirts of that, Dennis, part of the problem is, I think most people believe that China does not want a President Trump after 2020. And that they are holding off. A lot of people and a lot of conservatives believe that the trade agreement will not happen because China is going to play again. They're very good at playing the long game. contrast that with what Ilana just says out there, the agricultural product increase, and what do you say?
Well, I've been watching this thing evolve for a very long time, and this change in Chinese philosophy on the trade deal was sudden, abrupt, and significant. And I knew it was related to food. The extent of the damage to the Chinese agricultural system that is occurring is something they tried to keep quiet for a very long time. But, you know, no, this is not, you know, there's no long game, short game, whatever going on here. This is China basically saying, the United States of America, we need your help, and we're willing to give concessions to you in terms of, you know, our industrial base is secondary to the fact that our people are going to die if we don't get food.
Now, if that's true, what you're saying, Dennis, then you would obviously agree that this deal is going to happen. Then you would say you would agree with the president.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think the deal is going to happen. I think it's, you know, necessity can change things overnight in this world in many different ways. And this is one of them. And I think, you know, from our part, you know, our part of the deal of saying, okay, you buy more of our agricultural goods, and we'll ease the pain on your industrial sector by holding off on tariffs. We got a lot of cards to play
right.
in this.
And the president's been playing those cards. The fact that China is promising to agree on new guidelines on, listen to this now, Dennis, currency management, right, or manipulation, if you want to call it that. The management is the kinder word, clearly. Intellectual property and technology transfer. Now, those are big, big, hot issues the Chinese have never been faithful on. What do you think about that?
I think there's a shift that is occurring in China in terms of their understanding priorities. There's also been an internal struggle inside of China between what is essentially their middle class or industrial class, if you will, and their desire to win at any cost. Mm-hmm. The Chinese government has been trying to figure out a way to mitigate that drive to be hyper patriotic for China and China's sake. This is kind of a watershed moment for that country and understanding they're part of an international community and they actually need the international community. I think the United States has an opportunity here strategically to be very magnanimous, very understanding, wow. and do a lot of good out of this. And, you know, and I think Trump's the guy to make it happen.
Well, this could be a watershed moment in Chinese and American relationship for sure if all that happens and it comes through. I want to talk to you both next about these rallies the president is doing here. He's had a couple back-to-back here this past few days. You've seen him on Thursday and Friday, and the president, the one there in Minneapolis, turned really ugly. Protesters after the rally and the Antifa folks, and they got masks on, and they're throwing things and rocks and bottles at the cops, and they're throwing urine at the cops, and then they're burning MAGA hats, and all this violence. And you know, Ilana, back to the story we started on, I want to share with you. Now, I watched that particular rally, and I don't get a chance to watch a lot of these, but I did watch that because it was the first rally since this whole impeachment thing had started, and I wanted to hear the president's comments. It was a very fiery rally, no doubt about it. The president was on game, and it was game on. And it was fascinating. I mean, he is absolutely an entertainer, by no question about that. But I got to tell you, as I seen the protesters and the really ugliness of those extremists and those, I want to call them domestic terrorists, Ilana, is what they are, I believe, then I have to say, when I went and you seen the news cycle, back to what we started this program with today, I was so let down and disappointed to see the news people again disjoint and disreport and misreport, and they absolutely disgraceful. They blamed that all on Trump, and he had not a thing to do with busting in these domestic terrorists, and yet they blamed it all on the president and the rally. And that's what you mean earlier when you say you can't get any truth from the media, huh?
Yeah, exactly. This is exactly what I mean. And the thing that happened that I think is very interesting, that the press is doing to itself and to its message and to its mission, mm-hmm. is that they are misinforming America about what's really going on here. And what's really going on here, we were talking briefly about polls, the polls are irrelevant because what we are seeing at these Trump rallies, at every one of them, is more than 100,000 people sign in to reserve a spot at these rallies. And the halls that they have them in maybe hold 10 or 20,000 people. Yeah. So there are 20,000 people outside the arenas that are waiting in the rain to just to get a glimpse of the president. This is something that's never happened before in this That's country. Right. We have a rock star for president. And nobody, because the press isn't acknowledging it, mm-hmm. the people who should know and maybe could learn something from it are completely ignoring it. And I think what's going to happen in 2020 when November comes along is that the polls are going to be jam-packed with the people who go to these rallies, who support the president, and it's going to be a landslide for President Trump.
If the rallies are any indication, you may very well be right. It's an interesting point of judgment on the ground there versus these polls, which are so tilted and twisted, as we've seen historically now. I mean, the evidence was 2016 alone. That's a fact here. Dennis, back to Minneapolis itself now. Let me say this here. There was a war, a big war of words with the Minneapolis mayor, and it got pretty, he did not want the Trump rally there. He came right out and said, this is no place for our city. Of course, there was a lot of reports of overcharging for security and all of that, but he definitely did not hide his disdain for the president. And a lot of, there was speculation that he did not provide the proper security, what have you, that helped fuel these protesters and violence. And was that one of these cases, do you think? And did the Minneapolis mayor have any right to do what he did and say what he said?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a free country, right? So the Minneapolis mayor can mouth off all he wants. But here's the reality on the ground. The Minneapolis police did a really good job, apparently,
of balancing
this thing and staying calm in the middle of it. And interestingly enough, the head of the Minneapolis Police Association spoke at the Trump rally. So, you know, the bottom line is, you know, Minneapolis has become a battleground city. This is the home of one of the members of the squad. You're going to see this kind of poignant side taking by politicians occurring throughout this election cycle. We should just all get used to it and the fact that it's going to happen. We should also be thankful that in the midst of all that happening, we have calm police forces that know what their job is and will do it, because, you know, as Ilana pointed out, you know, 100,000 people signing up, 20,000 people inside the building, 20,000 people outside the building on the rally side. These people were not bussed in. They weren't paid for. They didn't get any vouchers to show up. On the other side of it, you know, they got thousands of people showing up, but they're all coming in with organizations that are providing support. I don't know how long these people can sustain it. And they all have this end of the night Antifa takes over and growls up the streets effect to it. I don't know how long the American people are going to stand for that. The Democrats, I think, have a liability there. The longer this Antifa stuff goes on all over the country, the more their position erodes.
But what's worse about this, Dennis, is they're not speaking out against it. That's what's so horrific. You'd never hear the left come out and talk about these protests or disown them or say they're wrong.
No, it's because it's all narrative driven, right? I mean, and the news too, right? You know, like, I get my friends in the news business mad at me when I say, you guys are narrative constrained. You won't go outside the box of what's in that Pandora.
Yeah.
And you're lazy to not go outside the box because it is your job to investigate and prove what that stuff is. And, and they go like, well, but bottom line is they're distorting what the American people see, and the American people are going to see it over time. These election cycles cause this kind of stuff to come to the fore, and the news has egg on its face.
Well, that's why I started the program the way I did. And by the way, the gentleman you spoke about and mentioned just moments ago is Lieutenant Bob Kroll. And in fact, Lieutenant Randy Sutton, Blue Lives Radio, has a program with the same gentleman you said that Trump at on the stage. He's on AmericaOutloud.com. You can hear a full interview with Lieutenant Bob Kroll in how he talked about the Minneapolis police and what happened there. And there was a movement with the police and the cops, and the president was very outspoken about it and said he supported them, and they sold a ton of shirts and raised money for charities. So it's really become a tit for tat kind of game here. So we'll see. And you know what's really, I know this isn't lost on any of you out there, but I got to tell you what, and we've got how much longer before the election in November 2020, people? Exactly. You got another 13 months of this thing coming. Yeah. Exactly. A lot of rallies, a lot of protests. It's going to be interesting to see if the left at some point comes out and disowns these protest groups and these masked violent domestic terrorists, or what happens there. They're talking about domestic terrorists. Ilana, I want to talk to you about the tax returns and what they're trying to do with the president again. The federal appeals court ruled that Donald Trump's accountants must hand over his tax returns to the Democrats in Congress. Now, this is another opportunity. They've continued on these narratives to try to nail the president. This is called a crucifixion of what they want to nail the president to, any cross they can find. Just pick a cross, any cross. And that's really what this is about. You've seen the story on this now, and that they've said this, but now it will be appealed, obviously. Does this end up in the Supreme Court, you think, or what happens to this thing?
It absolutely ends up in the Supreme Court if the Supreme Court is willing to accept it. I don't think that Trump is going to drop this. There is no regulation or law that says that the president that a candidate has to turn over his tax return.
Exactly.
It's been done on a voluntary basis for many years, and many candidates do it, but it is not a function of the law. And so I don't know how this judge came to this conclusion, but it's very clear.
Well, let me tell you how. He's part of the circuit court and part of the far left and part of that whole narrative.
The judge was an appointee of Clinton, I think. The courts have become politicized, and
totally.
This is a horrendous.
We've been seeing that, Ilana, throughout the country, where these circuit courts are doing exactly what you say. They're politicized. They're not. They're trying to legislate from the bench. Is they're trying to find a gotcha kind of moment. Would you give your tax returns over to these criminals? Exactly. So there you go. I rest my case, Your Honor. So the president, it will take it to the Supreme Court, as it should go, clearly. All right, on to Turkey, Syria now. And this is the story you've been hearing about the Kurds and President Erdogan in Turkey. And there's been totally blown out of proportion, this whole story, in both ways here. But there is this offensive. What is the latest? Let's just go right to you, Ilana Inket. What's happening right now with this story? And where do we go from here, please?
The fundamental point is that Turkey is continuing its invasion of Syria. And this is an invasion of another country. For whatever humanitarian reasons they try to give you, they are invading the country with heavy weapons, with airplanes. They've killed a bunch of people. Kurdish fighters, 23, were killed on the first day. And 100,000 people, these are Kurds who are running away from the fighting, they are being displaced. And what for? They're being displaced so that Turkey can bring in their Syrian refugees, who are refugees from the Syrian, what they call the Syrian civil war. There's nothing civil about it. But they're coming, and they're going to displace the Kurds so they can put in the Syrian refugees in this 20-mile-an-hour buffer. The EU is starting to wake up, and they say this is wrong. And Turkey says to them, you know what? If you try to frame this operation as an invasion, then all we have to do is open the doors and send 3.6 million migrants,
nice.
Syrian refugees
nice.
To you.
Yeah, nice.
So
isn't that a nice comment to make, huh?
There is nothing nice about any of this.
Yeah, no, nothing nice about any of it. There was an interesting twist to this story, Dennis, and listen to this now. This is, and a lot of people may not even know this, but the Turkish military that we're speaking about here, they shelled United States Special Forces during an operation there, which they immediately said, oh, that's a mistake. Now, let me make sure everyone understands. The reason President Trump moved our 50 troops out of there, I mean, we're talking a minuscule amount. It wasn't that they were going to stop the world there. It was that Turkey didn't want to accidentally kill an American soldier. The ramifications of that, well, let's just say that's significant, people. That's the core reason why Trump moved our, because which allowed Turkey to come into the Syria, North Syria area and invade that area. And again, you've got these fighting things here with the prisoners and the ISIS terrorists. And then you've got, you know, on the other side, the a senior Pentagon official said that, listen, they said they should know where all of our people are. We don't understand what they're doing here. What do you know?
Well, what I do know is that the Turks, we cut the feed to the Turks on tactical data as part of this. So, you know, and that was verified a couple days ago. So they're blinder than they say. And I think the Turks are very, very afraid that if they mistakenly awaken the American tiger, that it will go badly for them. They're already awakening the European lion. So I think Erdogan's is way over his skis on this one, and I don't think it's going to end well for him.
Interesting. Well, let's see what happens here. Dennis, while we're on it, while all this was going on, a lot of the headlines and the news stories were the president wants out of endless wars, Middle East, no win, no victory. I mean, we've heard those stories, well, since we were all in diapers. I mean, it's been going on, well before we were here. So the talking points that were put out there from the White House were that no more endless wars. Now, at the same time, the Pentagon, in a competing story, like within, I don't know, 24 hours later, you just can't believe this stuff. Pentagon sends 1,800 troops to Saudi Arabia, and as Trump calls for ending wars. And there were a ton of stories on this that showed a lot of people call it the hypocrisy that went on here. What do you think about that?
Oh, I don't think that's hypocrisy at all. People need to understand that what we're really doing in the other part of the Middle East is we're trying to set up the equivalent of a Middle Eastern Cold War. And we're doing that by attempting to construct a coalition on one side, which is our side, which we are building around the Saudi Arabians and the other nations, Egypt, Jordan, Israel. And on the other side of that is this morass that's happening in the northern Middle East with Iran, Turkey, Iraq, Russia. You know, we know that's going to be a mess. And what we're trying to build a containment zone around that so it doesn't spread to the rest of the world. And, you know, that is in our strategic interest to do.
This whole thing about Saudi Arabia, was you in support of the troops going out there that the Pentagon sent? Or did you side with a lot of these headlines that said that it was incorrect? Because I like where Dennis went with that. I think I don't disagree with anything you said. What do you think?
Well, I think there's more to the story. The United States is aware that Iran is getting very restless. And one of the things that they did recently was move CENTCOM, the central command of the United States forces, out of Qatar and back to South Carolina. And I think there's a reason for that. And are moving, not just moving the, 1,800 troops to Saudi Arabia, but also reestablishing or extending the terms of the soldiers who are 3,000 soldiers and military people who are out there. So we've got a situation that's brewing here that's very much under the radar. And I am not against this new deployment because I think we need it. And in fact, if we don't have it, we're going to be behind the eight ball because things will happen and we won't be ready for it.
Well, again, it's one of those things. You're done if you do, done if you don't. But I think America's got to, all America has to accept the fact that we will probably always have to have a hand in the Middle East affairs. And I don't think Dennis or Lana would discount what I say there. It would be ignorant for us to believe we can just shut the lights off and go home, people. It's not going to happen, obviously. And the president recognizes that as well, hence the strategic nature of the Saudi Arabia troops. But at least now, friends, you know the truth. What a great analysis and a tremendous thank you to Ilana Friedman and Dennis Santiago. So as we continue Viewpoint, friends, here and bring you truth and news, or what we call the out loud truth, yeah? So up next, a very interesting story on Big Pharma and your genetic code. And if you've ever done one of those ancestry tests, you know, those ones, they advertise them all the time on television, where you go, and we're all kind of interested with our roots, where we came from and what have you. That's what this kind of gets into, a little bit of this and a hell of a lot more. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio. And then, you know, you ever do those ancestry tests? I've always wanted to do one. I've never done it. Of course, my ancestors were all the way back on Pluto, as you already know, so it'd be hard to find them. I'm not sure what the hell they do there when I send in that DNA. Hey, let's get to the story here and bring in here Susan Price. Susan is an investigative researcher, a patriot, veteran advocate, Gold Star mother, weekly columnist here at America Out Loud. Her stories are always a must-read and are fascinating. Joining us as well, Jim McKay. Jim is a political analyst, commentator, radio producer here at America Out Loud. He has a 30-year background in global technology, telecommunications, and pharmaceuticals. In fact, he is one of the masterminds, him and Ava, behind Viewpoint, and have been with me since the early start, the very first start of this program. And they produce it. So good to have Susan and Jim here in this crazy story. Susan, you find the craziest stories. I just love it. Love it. And that story, by the way, is on AmericaOutloud.com. Go read it. And with your morning coffee there, or if you're catching this later in the day on podcasts, and with your afternoon cocktail, either one, right? You might need the cocktail after reading the piece, actually. But so, Susan, what was the impetus for this? Let me just go right to you and ask you. Now, I know this 23andMe did sort of they were bought out, I believe, by this Glaxo SmithKline, is it, I believe? Yeah?
Right.
So why did this story get under your skin? Tell us, what's going on?
Well, you know, I have a lot of friends that have bought into the 23andMe, and I'm also a victim of the Ancestry.com. So, I just get sick and tired of the ignorance that people, I could see if I like chocolate or vanilla or this or that. People, there's a bigger story here. Everything in our life has been weaponized and layered through the decades, actually right around the period of after World War II, when we did business with the UN and bring an Operation Paperclip in.
Susan, I thought you were going to say to me just then that was right after Adam and Eve had that dispute in the garden, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah, that's part of it. But so the thing is, this communist socialist agenda that we see unfolding in many, many areas of our life, every area of our life, and the canvas is very big and wide, and it's really, it's very demonic if you look at it. So, technology is a great thing, but when it falls into the hands of the wrong people, I've had the military people, which, you know, I have a deep connection with because my son was special forces with a high intelligence and clearance. And so the people he knew know stuff, and some are retired, but some work as contractors. And they told me, you need to do this story because the left and the elitists, the globalists, needed this technology and data to connect every criminal, and also not those just in the prison system, but the military families, so that they could keep a record and keep track of who's who and who's doing what. Kind of like a facial recognition, but on the level of a genetic code.
Susan, you really, at the end of the day, I mean, I think what you always kind of allude to here, and I'm going to be direct here a minute, is you just don't trust people to do the right thing. And when it comes to people like Big Pharma, as we just spoke about a minute ago here, in other words, this GlaxoSmithKline, you just don't trust a lot of these people, these pharmaceutical giants as well, to do the right thing by us, do you?
No, I don't, because, you know, I've seen it. I've seen it personally and professionally. I've witnessed a company here in Tampa, Florida. I don't know if I could say the name of it, but it's a nonprofit organization that grew into a monster. Mm-hmm. And when I saw armed guards in the big Hummer with armed guards come out of life, you know, this place that does the studies and the tissue and the blood, that's all before these technologies started taking off and we started hearing about human trafficking and endocrine and all these other things. I saw it step by step, level by level. I don't know why I see these things that people don't see for a decade or more.
Because you're suspicious.
Well, it's not. No, it's the opposite. When I see things, I'm curious. So I go looking and I'm like, what the hell's going on here?
What the hell's going on? We all should be asking that these days, Jim McKay. What the hell is going on here? Would you answer that question, please?
Yeah, you know, it started off some years ago with they started looking for cures for cancer. Mm-hmm. And cancer is not a bacteria. It's not a virus, which are two major diseases. It's a genetic disease that basically corrupts the cells and starts growing these cancerous cells in your body. So they branched out on a new world when they started looking at your gene pool and what was going on there. The big risk here is, as Susan says, if the wrong people get a hold of this and they have wrong motivations, there can be tremendous consequences. I mean, you look back to nuclear energy, and the one thing I always say when we look at things like this is Robert Oppenheimer, who was behind the atomic bomb, said, "I have become death, destroyer of worlds." Anytime science gets bastardized, I think of that.
And Jim, how do we know or prevent the bad people from getting it?
You can't. Mm-hmm. And the bad people are usually sitting in Washington, D.C. and Moscow in places like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're starting to sound a little paranoid, Jim, like Mr. Outlaw here.
Not at all. I worked for the second largest pharmaceutical company in the world for 10 years.
Yeah.
And we were a predominant leader in cancer research, which was genetic. Mm-hmm. And basically they did a lot of work, and some of the cures for cancer is coming out of that today. But when you look at cures for cancer, you look at people, you know, have looked for the fountain of youth forever, and they're looking at ways that they can prolong life with genetic engineering.
Jim, let me ask you this, right? Prolonging life is the whole key to genetic engineering, and let's just AKA the fountain of youth, right, Jim? I mean, if we can get the fountain of youth, and someday they say we may start to live much longer lives. I mean, I hear that a lot, and they say, well, we'll be alive at the time. I don't know, it depends how fast they make these. Let me ask you something, Jim. It's an age-old question, and it's come up before with me multiple times, where I've heard people say to me, I mean, in a very sincere and honest way, that they think there's already a cure for a lot of these cancers and what have you, but that back to a big farmer, it's not a profitable thing to cure it, and so they leave it uncured. And when you say the background experience you've had with pharmaceutical and all, how nefarious are these pharmaceutical companies, and how concerned should we all be, Jim?
The pharmaceutical industry is probably one of the most closed and
exactly
complicit industries. Companies own companies, have major interests in others. And this whole thing with patented drugs and versus generics and releasing things. And it's huge, huge money. I mean, companies like Novartis, Pfizer, they're $100 billion companies employing tens of thousands and even hundreds of thousands of people. So there's tremendous amount of money going on, and they don't share that with the consumer too well.
No, I mean, that's how they get rich and loaded, all these big operations and what have you. So, all right. So, Susan, in your research here, so tell me this, because I don't understand totally the link. If you've gone in and you've had this ancestry report done, which I've never done, I've thought about it, but I haven't. You've done it, Susan, right? You've done one, you said?
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, and they're all a little different. They're similar in some ways and different in others. But
so how is that a threat to this story, though? If you've just done a simple report, how does that become? How does that impact with this genetic engineering? How is that going to impact me or you?
Well, we don't know what they're doing behind the scenes and who their other partners are, what they're doing. They have the biggest database sharing in the world. And how do we know what's in our genetic code? We could have the God gene in there, some of us. And our genetic code. And these masterminds, let's put it this way, how many doctors and scientists and researchers have been killed alone in the last decade? Over hundreds of them. What did they know and why? One question leads to another, Malcolm. People have to really do their own research and listen and follow their own discernment.
Well, that's it. That's what you say all the time. Or read a Susan Price article, even. Susan would do that as well. Jim, straight out question, simple question. Do you think anybody is close? I mean, does one of these large companies, is there a cure? Do you think there is a cure for cancer somewhere out there?
Yeah. Novartis Pharmaceuticals out of Switzerland is the leader in this. They have, through this genetic research, narrowed gene pools down to 28 different types. There's funny thing in the world is you had 8 billion people in the world, and everybody has different genetic code except those people that are identical twins. Okay? So what they've come up with is a way of engineering molecules for drugs that fit your particular genetic makeup. Mm-hmm. And they're doing this in clinics today. It just takes a long time to do. It's not like you can go to the pharmacist this week and tomorrow get a prescription for your cancer yet. But that's where it will be in another 5 years.
Wow. You know, Jim, did you like my idea or explanation about the good gene and the bad gene, the evil gene, Jim?
Yes. You know, part of the research is they're looking for genetic dispositions towards criminal activity.
Wow.
Towards that psychic.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Isn't that in some of those futuristic movies, Jim?
Definitely. It's great, makes great science fiction. Right. But, you know, science fiction just always seems to become science fact after a number of years.
Hold on. You, what you just said is a mouthful. Do you believe that's true, that statement?
Yes, very much so.
Interesting. I mean,
people talked about airplanes flying 30 years before they did, and going to the moon was a pipe dream. Jules Verne wrote about that.
Well, you scare me now. You scare me now because a lot of these movies are so darn crazy, Jim. And if some of this stuff's going to come true, I'm going to go back to my homeland on another planet somewhere. I mean, come on, buddy.
Yeah.
But Malcolm, that's Hollywood. And we see how Hollywood fractions into the left and what's taking place behind the scenes.
Wow.
They use them to promote and for propaganda. They're the biggest tools.
Right.
People are impressed because they just see. And plus, these people put it out there, and that's part of their creed. They tell you, we put it out there.
Yeah.
You know,
you both, it made me think, Jim, Susan, about when I was watching, I watched the last Jurassic Park film. I've watched all of them. They're all always fascinating. When they got into the genetic engineering, and you remember that in the lab scene and all of that? And it really got me thinking as a whole, because it's quite spooky, the stuff is. That's what you were talking about, Jim, right?
Yes, actually, some years ago, I was on a field trip with my daughter to Lawrence Livermore Labs out in the valley in California, Northern California. That's where they did all the H-bomb work. It's funny. And they one of the kids asked one of the scientists, what about this genetic engineering with dinosaurs? And the guy's answer was, it's possible we're not there yet. And they do a lot of genetic research out there, these people.
Yeah, yeah. Jim, let me ask you this last follow-up here is, do you think, being where we're at right now in life, do you think that we will ever have, in the immediate years to come, a cure for cancer out there for people?
I think so. What we really need to do that is and it's funny, it's kind of like a Manhattan Pop project we put together for the atomic bomb. Cancer research is duplicated, watered down, spread all across the world, hundreds of billions of dollars spent on it. And like you said earlier, it's a big business. And the longer you can keep the business growing and providing landfalls of money to the research, it'll go on. I think President Trump, when he called for a cure of cancer, he called for the cure, but the method hasn't been followed through on. You need to get these people together in one place.
It's a great point. Yeah, it's a great point.
Just like we went to the moon in 8 years.
Yeah.
After we had no technology.
Do you think we could do it in 10 years, Jim?
Absolutely.
Wow. Cool.
And Malcolm, I want to just come in here for a second. There actually is a cure for cancer. There's many cures, but this one it's called the miracle cure. It's called GCMAS. It's for everything from cancer to autism, okay? And it's a class of proteins, and they attack the cancer cells. I'm going to also do a story on this very soon, an article on this.
Well, listen, I could talk to you two all day long on this topic. I'd say we need to expand this into another conversation. Susan, thank you for bringing it up. And again, I want to encourage people to go read that article. It's on America Out Loud, Big Pharma and Your Genetic Code and What Could Possibly Go Wrong. It's a fascinating read, as all of Susan's columns are. And I know you would agree with me there, Jim. They're always worth a read. They're always good. You learn something, right, from it. And that's the whole key to this thing here. Tremendous thank you to you both. What an interesting story. And, you know, people, in my simple world, in my simple view, I'm just looking for the good gene. You know, I know I've got the God gene in me. I hope you do as well. But we got to have, exactly, we got to have our eye out for those evil people. And so, listen, we're going to take on more of that on Viewpoint in just ahead here. Next up, a very interesting conversation, the brainwashing of Black America. Wow. Let's get into that next point. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
So you've heard me talk about this, the brainwashing of Black America. What does that really mean? And we're going to tell you next in this next segment, friends. But let me tell you at the top of this segment as well, something very important. I have an amazing program on this you must listen to, which will be on Monday on The Voice of a Nation at 6 p.m. I encourage you, big time, to listen to that show and invite others to listen to it. You will hear one of the most interesting conversations, I promise you, on Black America and the rights and wrongs and what's happened in the capacity to politics and our lifestyle that you've heard in your life. And so I say that, and that's going to be with the next gentleman I'm going to introduce you to right now, Ron Edwards. And Ron joins us on this discussion here. Ron is a weekly columnist at America Out Loud. He's a talk show host. Also, he does a program called The Edwards Notebook. It's a 90-second. And I got to tell you, they are so well done. They play on the network here. They play on different networks in the country. Plays on America Out Loud here. You'll hear it throughout the course of a day here. But we run them because I think they're so well done. It's 90 seconds of, you know, you get to the point quickly, Ron. You know, that's what it's all about. You get to the point, you make your point, you make people think. And that's what we try to do here, friends, at America Out Loud, is to get people to think, which is why we also have here today, Dennis Santiago is back with us here. And Dennis always makes you think. Because he's a strategist. He's a philosopher, a patriot. Let's talk about the brainwashing of Black America here. Interesting also article up on the platform you want to read that Ron Edwards has up there. We'll tell you more about that here. There's no doubt billions of dollars have been spent on programs such as affirmative action, government housing, Head Start education, opportunity zones, and so many more of these, and yet many of them are failures. I want you to take it from there. Tell us what's going on and why they have failed and what's behind all this, please.
Well, it's actually trillions of dollars, up to $23 trillion that have been wasted, supposedly to help Black Americans. And when you go back to urban renewal, SNCC and all these other, programs that supposedly were designed by the great society man, Lyndon Baines Johnson, who said that he would have those niggers voting 200 years for the Democrat Party. The only thing they had to do was to fool them through these government programs and they'd be sucked in. And they have learned to like it, love it, and want more of the liberal dogmatic abuse. And you talk about Head Start. I think that is one of the most dangerous things that you can do to children, to put them in these government schools even before kindergarten, because they're only meant to indoctrinate them, to destimulate, not to stimulate their intellectual development, but to literally destimulate it. And this is all by design to destroy not only Black America. Black America was basically only a petri dish and a practice, as it were, in order for them to destroy the entire country. When they started out on this venture many years ago in the earlier part of the 20th century, they could not take down the entire country in one fell swoop. And they knew they had to start somewhere. And they felt that they could start with the Black Americans. They called them victims. They told them that, hey, you can't make it here. It's all against you. You're seen as nothing but, low life, second class citizens, blah, blah, blah. And so they bought into it. They became very bitter. They had helpmates, people like, very forgettable individual. He was in the earlier part of the 20th century, Dubois, W.E.B. Dubois. They said he was a great intellectual. I read his work, and to be honest with you, he was a very evil gentleman. He hated people like Booker T. Washington, who urged people to prosper wherever they were and to build their lives up and not to hate this country and to build their families and to do the positive things in life so that economically Blacks could move ahead and not need the help of supposedly generous liberal white people. And so W.E.B. Du Bois was part of the leftist white man infiltration of the Black community to destroy it. And he was well paid, just like the liberal or leftist, I'm sorry, leftist race pimps of today. People like Al Winbag Sharpton, Jesse, hey, where's the camera, Jackson, and many others who run around this country, just telling lies and to convincing people that they should hate this country. But the only thing that it has done is turn people into professional complainers. And biblically, the word complaining means to be left behind. And if you look across the American landscape, who has been left behind for the most part? I mean, sure, there are Blacks who step out from the plantation and excel marvelously in this mm-hmm. country. And it's as if there's a magic wand waved over the minds of the rest, and they ignore those great examples and continue to just be left behind, to bitch and moan, and to like it, love it, and want some more.
And you know, Ron, the plantation you mentioned, and let me make sure people understand, when we talk about the plantation, and I know for me, and I think for you as well, we're speaking about the plantation being the Democrat Party. Is that correct?
Yes, it's a mental plantation.
That's right.
It's something that it's self-induced now. course, there was the physical plantation. But once the KKK and the Democrats were extracted or prevented from physically inhibiting blacks through lynchings and things of that sort, they switched and they infiltrated the school systems. Because if you look back in American history, even during the days of Jim Crow, if a black person went to school, they still learned. And they had the capabilities to go to college if they were able to get into the colleges. They were able to intellectually compete. Today, because there's no more of the physical component, they have crippled them mentally and spiritually. Right. And thus now, right, when you go to college or to university, it's like, what's this? And so they have to, get these special programs where they get extra grade credit, like at the University of Michigan, right. at the expense of more qualified other people like whites. In fact, there was a case where we were involved fighting against the University of Michigan, letting in blacks who were not qualified mm-hmm. in the name of affirmative action.
Right,
which
right.
makes
which
it more
I never
difficult
understood
for the rest
that
of
program. I know. I never, that program was always a head shaker to me. I Ron, I hear you loud and clear. I know. It makes no sense when you're trying to, I mean, what should be fear for all. You know, the plantation thing that you talk about there, and we use that again as a metaphor, people, for the fact that and I think we can all agree the political operatives, Ron Dennis, the Democrat Party, they want you to, it seems like their goal is they want the groups to be dependent on them. They enrich themselves and empower themselves for their longevity and careers in the political environment by having people, they're like leeches. They're like, they can't get enough. They need people to want them. And that's where the whole plantation, you know, Dennis, with what we say about the plantation there and say that, how do people perceive that, I'm saying? Well, I mean, we're just being honest. And you hear Ron say it out there and put it out there and a lot of people. Does everybody get that and understand what that means?
No, I don't think people really get that and understand what that means
either.
Right now.
Yeah.
The whole concept of continuing to keep a group or class of people constrained mentally in what really is at this point a prison of the mind is lost on a lot of people. And it's, you know, 'cause people don't like to talk about it or think about it. But the reality is that it is there. I mean, I physically watched this happen because many years ago after the 1992 riots in LA, I actually worked for Rebuild Los Angeles for a while, helping them to attempt to rebuild it. And what was interesting about that, to Ron's point, is that at first it was like this glittery thing with all the luminaries of town talking about it. By the time I got to Rebuild LA, Ron, I got to tell you that the place was dilapidated. Everybody had left. I went in to take a look at their computer servers. They had left them in a closet that had not been opened for months, and the machines were dying inside there. So from the point of view of essentially keeping people down, that's the way the system is structured. But I got to tell you this, when I actually went into the communities of South Central Los Angeles, I found an amazing group of people that did not believe at all that story, their prison of the mind, was real. I found, to use a metaphor from a TV show, I found Aunt Esther. And you know what? She goes, I don't believe what those jive people up in City Hall are telling me. We know how to take care of ourselves here, and we're going to make it happen for us. And you know what? They rebuilt that town, not because the outsiders helped them, but because they helped themselves. And that is the real Black America that I know.
Dennis, do you see any, I mean, how would you assess where the Democrat Party in Black America is now, in your opinion?
At this point, what I really see there is the Black America has gone two separate ways since the Lyndon Johnson, I'm gonna own these people forever thing. It's there's a group of people that have made real progress and are really part of the American matrix of plurality at this point, and they are doing it very well. And there's these people that were left behind that couldn't get out, that the system was structured against them getting out, and is still structured against them getting out. And those people that are trapped have, in a year since, been joined by other peoples that are also being kept from getting out. That includes in the LA area, which is the area I know most, an influx of Hispanic people that are similarly being told that you can never get out of your own plantation of the mind. And I think it's wrong.
Ron, talk to me about the future of Black America, please.
To dovetail on Dennis's point, he's correct when he talks about there are two aspects to the Black American community. You have the masses that are incurably ignorant. They bought into the system, systematic lies, and they help the system to destroy not only their own communities, but this nation. And I'll give you a perfect example. You talk about California. I remember several years ago, there were Blacks. They were running around talking about their support of letting in the immigrants, and they're racist to keep people out, and on all of that. And the only thing they're talking about is keeping out illegal border crossers, not just people, period. But of course, they brought into the lie that they've got to let everybody and everything in. Well, these idiots, these Black idiots who are in support of open borders, forget that a lot of the people that are coming from these different lands, whether it's from Central America, whether it's from the Middle East, hate Black people even worse than the white people supposedly here in America. I mean, it was, what was his name? Cesar Chavez, who said Black people can do nothing. And the Cubans and their maltreatment of the darker people. And then Brazil, the same thing. And these dumb, ignorant Black Americans who are so in support of bringing these people in illegally and to flood the country to harm America, not realizing they're going to be hurt the most. If America goes down, America's going to be falling down on top of them, because many of them are already at the bottom.
Right.
And this is all planned ignorance. But at the same time, Dennis is also correct when he talks about the rest of us who have chosen not to remain ensconced in the plantational way of thinking and stepped away. We're taught by our parents and others to step away from that and to realize that once we exercise our God-given talents and abilities and educate ourselves and seek the truth, then we are able to set ourselves free from the shackles of ignorance and just out and out lies, and build for ourselves and our families and our communities, and be a part of this great, wonderful thing we call the Republic.
That's right.
United States of America.
So, Ron, are you optimistic about the future?
Yes, yes, absolutely. I'm very optimistic about the future of this country and the future of Black Americans who want to choose the light, who want to choose the right way of living. I'm very optimistic. And the reason why I'm optimistic, because I'm seeing the fight today. And some people will look at it and like, oh, my God, this is so horrible. Look what's going on. Well, the reason why it looks so horrible is because finally we're fighting. And when you're in a fight, there's a dust up. You see the dust. The punches going on. Yeah. And we're in the midst of a battle. And that's good.
Yeah.
And so we're going to get through this. Gentlemen, we're going to get through this fight. And we're going to restore this great, wonderful nation called the United States of America. Ronald Reagan said, our best days are yet to come.
You're listening there, friends, to the voice of Ron Edwards and Dennis Santiago. What an interesting conversation. Now, there's a lot more to hear about the voice of what you just hear, Ron Edwards. You hear him for a whole hour on Monday with me on The Voice of a Nation. Join us there. I really like this conversation we have because, as you can hear from Ron, he is a beacon of truth. He does not hold back, which is why I like his Out Loud Truth. He puts it out there. Whether you like it or you hate it, I mean, it's the truth. And nobody ever said the truth is supposed to be comfortable or make you feel comfortable, people, but it is the truth. And if we're going to improve life for all and build that future they just talked about, we're going to need the truth to be by our side here throughout all of this here, for sure. In the meantime, you'll find an amazing article and column from Ron Edwards on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com. Just go there. The Future of Black Americans. And that is from Ron Edwards. You'll get his other thoughts there. I encourage you to read that, share that out there. Big thank you here to Ron Edwards, Dennis Santiago. What a great program. And you know what? We did it all without even saying many of those words like Russia collusion or impeachment or some of the crazy stuff. I hope you learned some things. Had a little bit of fun along the way here, friends. That is our point and our hope, and we hope also you have a blessed, blessed day here. Thank you for being part of the journey here, as always. It's time to get involved and get loud.